Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
The issue of hallucinations. Most people think of hallucination as maybe a harmless error, but generally, if you think of it from either a medical perspective, LLMs have been known to talk about things that do not exist. In legal context, they've talked about cases and precedents that do not exist. So there is a big issue because we do not really have the expertise to even figure out when they're hallucinating. So I would say that's another big challenge that we have in terms of a governance framework is our hallucination.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much, everyone, for this important, raising this important issue. Okay, Shirit, let me give, ask you a specific question related to your expertise. Considering your expertise in legal compliance and technology solutions, how do you see the role of regulatory frameworks in shaping the ethical use of generative AI? And I think I'm going to be a bit more controversial on the answer on this one, right? To me, yes, you definitely must have regulation and it must be regulated in a certain way because this is a very powerful tool. If you're going to use it, you have to use it properly. It's not then going to cause a lot of trouble, right? But the problem, the current regulatory framework now, whatever we're trying to build, it doesn't really address the thing that we are concerned about. And every time you try to build a regulatory framework, it will take a long time to build. You need a bunch of lawyers to discuss the issue. Then you need to go to the kind of the business expert to take his input. Then you have to go to the country regulation and sometimes EU as well.
Yeah.
Because this does take a long time. I think I saw your LinkedIn post saying that the most degree just came up. EU just came up with a new regulation after a year, and ChatGPT came out about 3-4 years ago. Actually 4 years behind of what is being done.
Yeah.
So that's one of the concerns, right? The other concern I have with the regulation that we have now, regulation does not exist by itself. You do need other things such as support to make it work properly.
Yeah.
And the one is the next step will be the rollout. You need to explain to all the participants or people using it how the regulation and the regulatory need to be defined and used. And there's a lot of area that you wouldn't be able to actually think when you're building the regulation.
Right.
And the more important thing is basically asset monitoring. How do you actually monitor it? Do you have the technology? Do you have the expertise to monitor it? It's no point having a regulation without proper monitoring.
That's really interesting point that you're raising. Actually, when I'm attending in their meetings, governments or working with industries, you look at companies mainly complain that these regulations and regulatory, time-consuming regulatory process stop or slow down their innovation process or a commercialization process compared to the US or other countries that they have less strict on their regulations. So how do you see how we can balance this between regulation and innovation?
I can tell you at this point in time, I don't really have an answer for that. But what I can tell you that I can see that if the regulation is too strict in the EU, a lot of companies will move their development somewhere else.
Yep.
Yeah. And the company that is actually left in the EU are falling behind.
Yeah.
That the people are in other countries are allowed to actually do a lot more sophisticated and a lot more risky algorithm.
Yeah.
To actually move ahead.
Yeah, that's a really big challenge. How much people should sacrifice or risk on AI safety to commercialize faster or don't be behind the market? That's a question I would like to answer that one, Larry.
Yeah, I think what some verticals, some industries have been able to do is to map regulation towards standard tool or mechanism across an organization. A practical example is, for example, if you look at the end-to-end ML ops, right? You have a lot of algorithms being built, and there are various mechanisms to evaluate such algorithms. For example, if you build a complex machine learning models, one of the things you want to do is to understand if it's explainable,
yep.
Right? You have to justify that to regulations. Another yardstick you might want to do is, what is the drift? Is it data drift or model drift? And I quantify it. What is the root cause analysis of that drift? If we look at fairness, how do we actually measure if an algorithm is fair or not, right? You have what we call protected group in the data sets. So a protected group can be gender, it could be race, it could be, you know, anything you deem harmful in the model. How do you set constraints, fairness constraints? So we have things like district impact ratio that allows you to measure the fairness in those data sets or model. How do you look at the root cause of what is driving that fairness on the algorithm, right? And then how do you monitor that over time? So these are things organizations are now putting in place alongside regulation when it comes to MLOps. When we look at the LLM ops, it's another ballgame because it's a massive model, right? One of the things organizations are doing now is a tech, a name called LLM as a judge. So you use another LLM to judge another LLM. So one of the things you might want to do is to create what we call feedback loop mechanism. So one of these feedback loop mechanism could be, how grounded is the LLM on the knowledge base, right? Is it answer relevant? Is it context relevant? Is it harmful? Is there hate in the Gen AI? Is there PII data sets? So there are guardrails organizations are doing these days to ensure they are compliant with the regulation as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Anadi. Emily, let me ask the next question from you. Your work focuses on human-centered AI, which is my area as well, but in different applications. So I really would like to know, how can organizations design AI systems that prioritize ethical considerations while remaining innovative? How we can do that?
I think I touched upon that a little bit yesterday during my talk. First and foremost, the model of human-centered AI is that, let me pause for a moment. How many of you guys have heard of the term humans in the loop? Yes, indeed. So human-centered AI has a different take on it. Instead of humans in the loop, where it indicates that humans are afterthought after the technology has been developed, we look at having humans in the group, machines in the loop. And what that means is, there are four T's that I always encourage the teams within when they're building or adopting AI to think about. One is your talent. The second component is the tools that you're rolling out. The third component is trust. How do you continually build trust, reinforce trust, and monitor trust? And the last but not least is teams. And specifically, we're looking at diversity, interdisciplinary, and cross-functional collaboration. Because going back to what Larry you have mentioned earlier on in terms of fairness and explainability, the more you have different diverse thoughts in the room where you are creating AI, the more it is that you are able to come up with a comprehensive solution as much as possible. Because the diversity is going to help challenge one another and help you see things that you don't see before. And not just saying this from a perspective of different types of demographics diversity, but also in terms of the roles that people are in. Bring in your psychologists, bring in your legal team, bring your compliance folks, bring your business SMEs, bring your UX researchers and designers, because they can help bridge that gap between product teams and that of the users. Bring in your actual users along the conversation so that they can share with you what are your main concerns every single step of the way.
Yeah, just to add on that, as I said earlier, the key is data, right? If there is no diversity in the data, you can't expect any form of magic in terms of output from the algorithm. So making sure you have an all-inclusive data is the key here.
Absolutely. Data is the bloodline of AI systems. So.
Excellent. Thank you very much, everyone. Sanjay, let me ask, do you want to add some on that? Okay. So Sanjay, let me ask the next question from you. As a thought leader in AI regulation, what gaps do you see in the current AI governance in models, particularly for generative AI?
So some of the big gaps that in the conversations that I have with policymakers, I have with industry leaders is, Some of the key ones are with standardization. We don't really have a global standard. So how do enterprises kind of figure out where to apply governance standards? How do policymakers figure out what to apply in terms of standard? You have the UAI Act, but, you know, in the U.S., we don't have any policies. In the rest of the world, is again, all fuzzy. Then the other issue, obviously, is something that the other panelists had talked about, is bias. I mean, data, as both of them have said, is a key. Now, some of it is we don't know where the data is coming from, so where there is inherent bias in there. Then there's a whole issue of explainability. It's a black box in many, many cases that how we really figure out where, how are these LLMs making up the decision, the input that is coming in. Privacy, you have GDPR here, but there are full issues of the data that comes in. Security, in terms of making sure the LLMs that you all have, how are they not getting penetrated through cyber attacks and cyber injections? So those are some of the key ones that I would say are that in the conversation that we have that come up.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. When it comes to the explainability, if AI cannot explain itself or the human cannot understand how AI make decisions, how certification agencies or policymakers can certify this technology? That's a big question. And if they can solve this one, despite investing billions of the billions investment in AI, but if at the end there is no certification or explanatory for the AI, it's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, just to add to that, right? We did a survey recently to understand the reason why a lot of Gen AI do not make it into production, asking industry leaders. The number one is the quality. Two is the security. Three is hallucination. If organizations don't have a standard way to mitigate all these three, it's going to fall by the wayside. It's going to be an experiment or an academic exercise, which is never going to make it into production.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Just want to add to that point as well, right? Everybody's talking about you need to do log testing, you need to ensure the data is clean and everything, right? But you look at the organization perspective, right? To do this is very expensive. You have to invest a lot of money, time, and resources to actually do it, right? So the question that you need to ask is the company really willing to do this, or they just take something that's available in the market and just use it for whatever data is bright? Because investment to actually do this is really high. Okay.
With the consequences of not doing it are probably a lot higher than doing it. The question is, are you going to build a plane without putting in safety standards or just let the plane fly and pray that it kind of works? I think that's the question that we really have to.
Yes, true. But I think at that point in time, nobody really thinking about the plane crashing. Everybody just wants to build the plane. I think there's a lot of the scenario that I personally see in a lot of the development of just JDI by various companies. Okay, great.
I think, personally, I would embrace innovation. I often think you can eat your cake and have it, right? It doesn't have to cost you your security, your privacy. There are a lot of techniques to mitigate against this too, right? In terms of security, you have network policy, KPL, multi-factor authentication that allows people who are not supposed to access certain data not to get access to it. You know, in terms of privacy as well, you have, role-based access control, masking of rows and columns, which allows you, again, to mitigate, against policy, network policies. So you have ways to guardrail against those problems and then also embrace innovation as you tag along.
Excellent. Shekhar, let me ask you the next questions for your side. As a technology leader in payments industry, what is the biggest challenge, ethical challenge for the financial sector? What do you see the biggest ethical challenge?
Yeah, especially the fintech industry, what we find is, payments are the ones which are at the core of the fintech industry. And, processing this transaction normally, there are quite many cyber attacks that we also see. So, and in addition to that, there are many fraudulent transactions as well. So detection of fraud and prevention of the fraud, the transactions. You know, that's the biggest challenge that we have in the fintech sector.
Yeah, actually, my next question was exactly the same. This is how we can actually, I think this is a challenge that you see, how we can define a responsible AI in the fraud detection, or how we can ensure that AI responsibly choose the right fraud. I don't know, it's going to be really big challenge for you, isn't it? Or for the AI?
Yes and no. So it all depends on how you apply. Fraud detection is not the before the advent of AI, but it has always been in place. But AI has kind of accelerated, because with the AI, you have possibility to process a lot many transactions. For example, in the past, if you were able to detect maybe 1 or 2% of the transactions as fraudulent, by processing 6 to 7% of the transactions, now we can actually expand the scope and really process all the 100% transactions and find those 2 or 3% fraudulent transactions.
Yeah, but that's the power of AI that I would say. But the thing is, this is
more in theory; it's not in place. Because we are talking about billions and billions of transactions that's happening every hour. And you really need to develop the algorithms which are using AI more figuratively.
Yeah, that's the thing. When we AI came and we want to make it completely automated, the concept of fairness, how we can ensure that AI make unbiased decision or fair decisions in detecting the fraud, how we can do that, it's going to be a big challenge. I get it's going to be data, but... I think it's not easy job to do that, yeah?
Yeah, actually, being in the fintech industry, we have seen some of the companies have already started to deploy fraud prevention as a service using AI, right? So, yes, it is difficult, but it has to be that. Just because, there are possibilities of unfair transaction you would need to start training your algorithms to make it more fair and unbiased. That's the important part of how you build them up the warning space.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Sherid, let me ask the next question from you. So with increasing scrutiny on AI-generated content, should companies be held legally responsible for the decision of AI? Who's going to be responsible for it?
I believe that the answer should be yes. The company should be held responsible. Because if you want to put a regulatory framework into place, somebody must be held responsible, and that should be the team or the company that is building it.
Yeah.
So I think we can follow the example, for example, the SCPA for Graph by TSEC, where even though the company sells to one party, but if they need to ensure that everybody in the supply chain are actually following that levels, not only just one party. But from that perspective, I believe that yes, company who actually build this GDI should be held responsible because they are the ones who knows what they are doing.
But the question is that we have different sizes of the companies. Is it a small company or medium-sized company? Most probably, they get the data from somewhere else or from the larger companies, or they get the models from the developers. So how they can be responsible for something that they have that much control on it? If you talk about the big companies, they have their own data, they have their own developers, their own models. Yes, I can agree with that one. The company should be responsible for it. But when it comes to the SMEs or small-sized companies, how they can manage that?
I think, again, we're going to follow the FCPA approach, or this island, from a justice approach, where they will target the main company that is developing it. I don't like to give an example, but yeah. If the Copilot that you're using Copilot as your main driver and develop the Copilot, anything goes wrong, maybe you need to go at Microsoft. Yeah. Then that will be for where that you data, not only at the source, but here down the line as well. Okay. At least that's my view, whether it is practical or whether anybody is strong enough to take Microsoft, anything goes wrong, that's a different discussion.
Okay. Let's see. Yep. Okay, Emily, let me ask you the next question. I'm not sure how much time we have, but let me ask the next question. How do financial institutions like Standard Chartered ensure AI models are fair and free from biases, particularly in areas like credit scoring and risk assessments? It's a similar question that I asked Shekhar. So from your point of view, how they can ensure that?
So I think a lot of the panelists here have touched upon some of the technical aspects and bringing in some of the human perspective. Within Standard Chartered, we have a responsible AI council and review forum. It is comprised of diverse perspectives, people of different backgrounds, of cross-functional collaboration. We do need people to assess each and every single one of these AI use cases. And because of the expertise and the domain that we do bring in, we're able to assess it much more holistically according to a set of responsible AI principles. So that's one way on a human aspect that we also look at in terms of ensuring fairness. So when we started out looking at some of the credit risk models, I am looking after all of the AI use cases from our back office functions, such as HR. We do use this for impact ratio when it comes to some of our resource and related use cases. And one of the recommendations that we did give to our credit scoring use case product owners is to also look at this for impact ratio, whether considering sample of the minority variables. That is something that we are able to transfer over. So that's from a very tangible perspective.
Yeah, I think the tool is important in one aspect. One of the things or the findings that come out of this tool is what we call counterfactuals. So when you assess the district impact ratio or other constraints, fairness constraints, one of the things or suggestions you get out of it is, well, as a counterfactual, these are certain things you need to follow, for example, to increase your chances of getting a loan. Now, some of these counterfactuals are controversial because if the result I'm getting from the algorithm is telling me I need to certainly increase my age, which is impossible, of course, to get a loan, then that's not counterfactual, right? So we need intuitive counterfactuals that are actionable. Now we can suggest to folks, for example, increase your income. That's something you can do something about, right? But counterfactuals telling you to increase your age or reduce your age, it's not going to cut it. But we have tools that make these suggestions, which doesn't make any sense as well.
Great. Thank you very much, Larry. Sanjay, let me ask you the last questions. We are running out of time, so I would like you to answer very briefly. Are there any global AI practice that the industries and AI users can refer to?
There are many best practices around the world. When you look at Singapore, has a pretty good, robust framework that's based on transparency and innovation. Japan has put a good framework together. Now, you could argue about the EU AI Act. It's a risk-based framework. OECD has put together a framework out there. So there are frameworks now. It works for Singapore. Then the Japanese framework works for Japan. So I think you can extrapolate some of the best practices OECD has laid it out there. So I think you can take some of those best practices. The question obviously comes down to is, we still are living in a fragmented world. Like in the US, we are not going to have an AI policy. So different states are putting up their policies. So if you're a global company, think about it. You have to comply with the EU AI Act. You have to comply with California's Act, Colorado's Act, Tennessee's Act. Then you have to comply with Japan. You have to comply. So you talked about small businesses. If you have a large company like some of these panelists have, it's great. You have internal resources. If you're a small businesses, you're out of luck because you can't afford to do that. So that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, we are running out of time. I would like to give an opportunity to audience to ask their questions from our current members.
Hello, my name is Ben Avis, and I organize a conference called RAID about the regulation of AI and data. And so this is a fantastic panel. Thank you so much to you all and for the invitation. Question for Cheryl, perhaps. This is about the issue of horizontal versus vertical legislation. So for a highly regulated industry like healthcare and the financial services sector, and you already have regulations, of course. So is horizontal regulation like the AI Act even necessary in your industries? And what's the challenges that you face? It's a big question, I know, of navigating those two, this additional layer of regulation.
As I wanted to highlight, as I highlighted earlier, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really answer from the regulatory point of view. From the
practical point of view, I still believe that regulation and these things still need to be regulated. The question is how you regulate it. That would be the bigger question that everybody needs to answer. Right? It will certainly help to have a guideline on how you do things. So that to me is the main focus on if you want to have regulation. And on top of that also, I think the training and the education of people that are doing this algorithm or development of AI, that is equally as important in addition to the regulation as well. You can have all the regulation, but if you have someone who is actually for up and have a very negative agenda to actually build it, no regulation in the world will be able to stop that. So to me, that's for me to come in parallel. Yes, regulation and of course education and ensure that you have the right people that actually leading the development of all these technologies.
I'll just add to that more from a financial sector perspective. There are quite many regulatory compliances that fintech companies have to go to. And the reason for this is basically protect the end consumer. Like, you know, if you are making a payment and, something goes wrong, who is responsible for it? So normally, if you are making an online purchase, so the merchant who is actually selling the goods is supposed to comply with all the regulations, right? So that's where the regulations are very important. And if you are bringing in something for AI, it has to be in place because otherwise, you know, things could be going anywhere. And that's what Cheryl was also saying. Yeah.
I think there is a question there.
Got one just down the front.
Hi, great discussion. With the emergence of open source and open ways, so people can download the whole AI model in their computer in their bedroom, disconnected from the internet. It is impossible to find out what they are doing, what they are up to. What is your take on this situation?
Okay, who is?
You're spot on, like people that have malicious or bad intention could go ahead and just download and do whatever they want. And I think at the end of the day, if they're doing it on a personal front, then I would let the law enforcement handle that. They're not doing it on a commercial basis, right? So there's no, the industry shouldn't be responsible for that. That's an individual person. But as an organization, I think, again, it's important to have guardrails where you're leveraging model. For example, at Snowflake, right, we have catalogs of model which are independent, which is on the platform, which means if you have to leverage this model, we take responsibility for those models, right? Because it's part of our offering in a secured and governed environment. So anything goes wrong, then you know you can always go back to Snowflake and then, you know, again, have a discussion. On top of that, again, if it's an individual person, then I would let the law enforcement, you know, take care of that one rather than an organization.
I think it also comes down to where you regulate the outcome also rather than just, the model too. Because in the U.S., we had this issue about somebody was impersonating President Biden's voice out there. So they went after 11 Labs and they went after the company that did this. And there have been, a lawsuit and a lot of penalties that have been put out there. So you can say you have an open source, but then the use of the open source also can be regulated. So the question is, who's responsible where there's a chain of custody that happens? So I think that's where the outcome can be regulated too.
And I think also just to add to that, if you're part of a larger organization like ours, we do AI literacy uplift. And part of it is looking at responsible usage and adoption of AI. So it's not just enough for people to have the tools, but also how do you utilize them in a responsible manner. And that's directly tied it to our code of conduct as well. So there's incentive there.
Excellent.
Any final question?
Yeah, it was a question there.
Firstly, thank you all for a very, very insightful talk on the ethics side of GenAI and big data.
There's a bit of talk at the start around the Who's Nation side of things. I'm really fascinated by that. It's obviously a big headache for a lot of regulatory bodies at the moment. And there was a small part, I think, from yourself, Shiri, on not really understanding why. That's obviously quite interesting because we develop these things and why. Do you guys as a panel foresee a future where hallucinations don't exist or at least come down from their current benchmarks? I think that would obviously eliminate that headache that we're having right now.
Let me just give an example of a human being, right? If someone asks me a question, I know the answer, I will answer. But if I don't know the answer, what do I do? I start, you know, thinking, looking here and there. If the question is too tough, then I start hallucinating, right? So all the AI-based systems, everything that we have developed is actually developed based on the human thinking patterns. Right. So for me personally, it is okay that the AI systems are hallucinating for now, but it is also learning from that. And it learns much faster because it has much powerful data behind it. You know? So that's how I will deal with this.
Well, one thing I would add is that it's great when you know it is hallucinating. What happens when you don't know it is hallucinating? That's the problem that we have in the legal, the medical, and so many other areas that we don't know in some cases. Patients are taking this word that for the symptoms they're creating or lawsuits or things of that nature. That's the challenge that we don't know it's true.
And I'll also add to that, right? When it comes to hallucination, misinformation, psychological manipulation, with some of our generative AI tools like ChatGPT and one and so forth, it is also the tone of which the message is delivered. When we look at a human being, if we're uncertain and we're thinking about answers, we're going to shift our glances here and there. There are beyond just verbal cues that you can look at, the body language, the eye contact, so on and so forth, you might be able to tell. But with a ChatGPT-like system, it is going to be much more challenging, and therefore the tone in and of itself is something to also think about.
And one last comment I'm going to make is have a solid evaluation mechanism to catch hallucination. There's a technique called RAG triads that allows you to detect hallucination along three axes. One of them is context relevance, answer relevance, and groundedness, which you can measure at the end of the day. So have a consistent evaluation technique to patch hallucination magic.
I think I agree with all my panelists here that eventually with the technology that we have, with the awareness that we have, that hallucination will go down. I think the bigger concern is basically that it was going to be done on purpose for various reasons. But that will still be, it will still exist. Yep. You can easily do that to here, do your political agenda, for example. You just put it there and then it hallucinate and direct you to a different direction.
And then also just wanted to add on to that, there might be a field of interest called symbolic AI, where it taps into understanding much more tips of explainability layer. That is a rising field that could give us additional insight into how neural networks are modeled.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now we are, most of the AI developers working on the neurosymbolic AI, combining the symbolic AI with the neural AI. Both these two AI are the parallel world of the AI. Symbolic AI is very good in terms of the explainability and reasoning. Neural AI is good in powerful pattern recognition, things like that. So combining this one has a great potential to solve the problem of the explainability, ethical issues, and hallucination as well. It makes a huge.
Yeah, totally agree. Because part of the issue with hallucination is that there is complexity associated with black box technology and it can't really trace back.
If you have any questions, we will be around. Please feel free to reach out to ask your questions. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.